welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of westerns. Later, a story featuring Paladin on Have Gun, Will Travel. But right now, the Hollywood soundstage with the well-known story, The Oxbow Incident, broadcast on CBS on January 17, 1952.
This is Charlie Ruggles.
This is Edward Arnold.
And this is Hugh Douglas saying, welcome to Hollywood Soundstage. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, the doors of our Hollywood soundstage swing open for 30 minutes of exciting drama. A most unusual story tonight. One of the greatest stories ever brought to the screen. The gripping and realistic study of what happens to men when they become a mob. Hollywood soundstage is proud to bring you transcribed 20th Century Fox Studios' magnificent motion picture, The Oxbow Incident, based on the famous novel by Walter Van Tilburg Clark, and starring Edward Arnold, Charlie Ruggles, and the Screen Guild Players.
I don't suppose many people remember it now. It was back in 1885, you see. A small thing, not much. You might say just an incident. The town looked almost deserted that day. A few wooden shacks, a blazing sun, one dusty street and nothing moving. Just an old, tired mongrel dog. Until that cowhand came pounding down the road, pulled up his horse in front of Darby's saloon and yelled,
"Hey, men! Where's everybody? Where are you, men?"
The boys came piling out of the bar. And pretty soon, the way they sounded, I could tell that something was wrong. So I left my place. I ran the general store, you see, and went right over to find out. Darby was the one who told me, standing behind the bar and polishing a glass.
Someone get Larry Kincaid last night. Found him laying in a dry wash this morning.
Dead?
Shot right through the head.
Yeah, but who? Kincaid didn't have any enemies. Who'd do a thing like that?
Been a lot of cattle stolen this year.
You mean rustlers?
Maybe. Jeff Farnley's taking it pretty hard. Him and Kincaid were buddies.
Yes, I know.
Them other boys are kind of hot, too. They find them rustlers, they might do something about it.
A lynching?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I'd seen things happen like that before. One minute, just a crowd of men, and the next minute, a mob. You know, it's a funny thing about mobs. No one wants to be first, and no one wants to be last. But just let someone start it off and the madness spreads like a prairie fire. I knew they wouldn't listen to me, so I sent a lad running to get Judge Tyler. And pretty soon he was there, up on the steps, facing the crowd.
Believe me, men, I know how it is. My old friend Larry Kincaid, one of the finest and noblest gentlemen.
Cut the snuffing, Judge. We got a job to do. All we want is your blessing.
Now, finally, of course, you can't flinch from what you believe to be your duty, but this is something that should be left to the law.
By the time the law gets ready to act, them rustlers will be over the Rio.
One more word out of you, Monty Smith, and I'll have you up for impeding justice.
Judge, you can't impede, but don't hardly move.
And you, Jenny Greer, a woman, to lend yourself to a thing like this.
That's telling him, Mom!
Yeah. Now listen, men. The sheriff is down at Kincaid's right now. Judge, is that true?
It sure is, Davies. He went down this morning.
Yeah, you see, men, everything's being attended to legally. Now you just have a long, hard ride for nothing. It'll be dark soon and mighty cold. Now my advice is to come on inside and have a drink and wait till we hear from the sheriff. What do you say?
Drinks on the house. One round on me.
And I'll up that, Darby. I'll make it two.
And I'll make it three for everyone but Jenny Greer.
Well, we had them laughing, and I was sure we'd won. Only just then we heard another voice, level, hard, and cold as ice.
What's the matter, men? Disbanding?
Looks that way, Major Tetley. Brother Davies here just about convinced us.
Of what, Mr. Davies?
Why, it's useless to follow those men, Major. They could be over the Rio by now.
But they aren't. As it happens, they went east by Bridges Pass.
Through the mountains?
That's right, Fondley. By way of Oxbow.
Yeah, but that's 8,000 feet up. They'd be crazy to go that way.
Not so crazy, Mr. Davies, knowing how crazy it'll look to us.
How come you're so sure, Major?
One of my riders saw them. He hid in the woods and let them pass. He thought it strange they should be driving cattle up there.
Cattle? Any marks?
Yes, finally. They carried the B bar H.
That's Kincaid's mark. The dirty rats. How many were there?
Three of them. Strangers. My rider said he'd never seen them before.
Yeah, but Major, why were you so long bringing us this word?
My son was out on the range. I knew he'd want to go along. Gerald, is that correct?
I'm here, Father. Isn't that all that counts?
It counts for me.
Finally, you stay off that horse. Now, I'm not asking you, finally. I'm telling you.
Telling me what, Judge?
Now, look, Jeff, you don't have to worry. This business will be taken care of.
Yeah, and I know who's going to take care of it. Me.
Now, Jeff.
Whoever shot Larry Kincaid ain't coming in here for you to fuddle with your lawyer's tricks for 6 months. Kincaid didn't have 6 months to decide if he wanted to die. You ready, Tetley?
Major Tetley, you mustn't let this be a lynching.
Well, it's scarcely what I choose, David.
You now promise me you'll bring them in for a fair trial.
Look here, Tetley, you know what's legal. You can't have a posse without a sheriff.
All right, what about me?
What about you, Mape?
I'm a deputy. The sheriff swore me in before he left this morning.
Well, in that case, Mr. Mape, suppose you deputize the rest of us.
You can't. It's illegal. No deputy can deputize.
What do you think, Major? Well, that's good enough for me.
Me too, Butch. Go ahead. Pray.
All right.
Butch Mape, you're violating the law.
All right, men, raise your right hands. I hereby solemnly swear that I am sworn in as a deputy in the case of the murder of Larry Kincaid, and am willing to abide by the decisions of the majority. So help me God. Say I do.
I do.
All right, men, check your guns and horses.
Come on, boys.
We'll leave from here in exactly 10 minutes.
Yeah. Next time, party!
Get a hanging in a town as dead as this one. You coming, Sparks?
No, sir, Mr. Smith. I don't guess so.
Why not? We ought to have a reverend along. Gonna be some praying to do.
Now, lay off him, Smith.
Excuse me, Mr. Davies. Maybe he's right.
No, he's joking you, Sparks.
Yeah, I know, but maybe someone ought to go that feels the way I do.
Why, sure. Davies can loan you his Bible so's to keep the burial fit and proper.
Thank you, sir, but I knows the text without the book.
Yeah, you can take my horse from the shed, Sparks. Come along, we'll get him out.
Thank you, sir.
Sparks.
Yes, sir.
Can that kid of yours ride?
Sure can, Mr. Davies, just like an Indian.
And he's the only one who can go.
Where, sir? Where to?
Down to Kincaid's to get the sheriff. Your father wants you to be riding up with him?
Sure, I suppose so. Major Tetley and son, riding out at the head of the pack.
You don't like this thing, do you?
How can you like it? Going out to hunt men like coyotes or rabbits? We're very brave, aren't we? 28 of us sticking together, trying to tell ourselves we're noble and right. Not one of us willing to cut and run because we're afraid somebody might think we're yellow.
Well, if you feel that way, why did you come?
Because I'm weak. My father's strong. That's hell. Can you understand how that's hell?
Now, you didn't start this. It isn't your fault, son.
If we get those men and hang them, I'll kill myself. I won't go on living, remembering I saw it and was part of it myself.
You could still go home.
No, I can't. Even if I could, it wouldn't matter. I don't count. I'm coming, Father.
Hey, Davies, I just heard that Tetley kid sounding off. What's feeding on him anyway?
Oh, lots of things, I guess. You know, he's not much like his father, Darby. He's soft. Besides, he's been sick a lot. Likes to stay by himself and read.
Don't sound right bright in the head to me.
Well, maybe not. But how would you feel if you knew your own father hated you?
Mr. Davies?
Oh, that you, Sparks?
Yes, sir. Mind if I sit with you a bit while we stop?
No, no, not at all, not at all. I was feeling sort of lonesome myself.
Mortal cold now, ain't it, sir?
Well, it'll be worse later.
Yes, sir. Mr. Davies, I sure wish we was out of this business.
Yeah, so do the others, but they're afraid to admit it.
It's man taking on himself the Lord's vengeance.
You think the Lord knows what's happening up here tonight?
Yes, sir. He marks the sparrows fall.
Time to move, men. Let's get going.
We got to have faith, sir. We got to wait for a sign.
I know, Sparks, but how long? How long?
It must be them up ahead. You can see their campfire.
Yeah, wouldn't they be showing a fire if they were on the run?
They would if they thought they weren't being followed, Davies. Now, men, let's not have any shooting or rough work until they've had a chance to tell their way.
The one that got Kincaid is mine. Don't forget that, Major.
I won't, Fondly. He's yours when we're sure. Gerald, you come with me. Mapes.
Yes.
You take six men and work around from the back. We'll close in simultaneously.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Davies, would you like a gun?
No, thanks.
Sparks.
No, sir, Major. Thank you just the same.
Well, as you choose. Let's go, boys. Good luck.
There were three of them, camping right along the Oxbow. A young fella, an old man, and a Mexican. They were sound asleep when we rode in on them. But it didn't take them long to wake up.
Look, what is this? What's the matter?
Don't move, young man. Put up your hands.
The rest of you, too. You, Max.
No, sorry.
That's all right, brother. You will.
Gerald, collect their guns.
What are you trying to do? What do you want from us?
We don't want nothing. This ain't no stick-up, mister. This is a posse.
We haven't done anything.
Well, that remains to be seen. Gerald.
What?
Why, you fool, don't get between him and my gun.
Look, what's all the mystery? Why don't you tell us what we're being held for?
Well, I'd rather you told us.
Told you what? What are you talking about?
Rustling. Ever hear of it?
Rustling?
Yeah, and murder.
Murder?
Ain't we had enough palaver? Let's get it done and go home.
That'll do, finally.
Who says so? Who picked you to be boss anyway? We got him. I say let's swing him before we all freeze to death.
Well, there's a fire over there. If you're cold, warm yourself. All right, men, bring the prisoners over to the fire.
All right. You
I'll
guys,
question them there.
Mr. Davies?
Yes, Spock.
You think the sheriff's going to get here in time?
That's what I've been thinking about. Suppose he doesn't get here at all.
You have just heard the first act of 20th Century Fox Studios' great motion picture, The Oxbow Incident, starring Charlie Ruggles, Edward Arnold, and the Screen Guild players. Act two will follow in just a moment, but meanwhile, here's something you ought to know. When the same emergency occurs 4 years in a row, we've got to accept it as average. For 4 years in a row, the yearly average for new infantile paralysis cases rose to 30,000, triple what it once was. Average cost for treating patients has gone up, too. Obviously, your National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis needs more money to answer every call for help this year. So give more dimes and dollars to your 1952 March of Dimes. Join today. And now, starring Edward Arnold as Major Tetley and Charlie Ruggles as Mr. Davies, with Eddie Firestone as Gerald, Anthony Barrett as Martin, and Jester Hairstone as Sparks, Hollywood Soundstage presents Act Two of The Oxbow Incident.
It was Major Tetley who questioned the prisoners, very formal and very quiet. Too formal, too quiet. There was something unhealthy about it, something horrible. Deep down inside, he was enjoying himself. He took the young fellow first, the one who seemed to be the boss.
What's your name, young man?
Donald Martin.
Where are you from?
Pike's Hole.
That's a lie!
Mr. Smith?
I get around Pike's Hole a lot. I never seen this fellow before.
I just moved in 3 days ago, Dave Baker's place. Bought it in Los Angeles last month. I give him $4,000, sight unseen. But my family's there right now, my wife and kids. Look, why don't you take me back and let me prove it? I'm entitled to a trial.
You're getting a trial. With 28 of the only kind of judges murderers and rustlers get in this country. Do you have any cattle up here with you? I won't ask you again.
Yeah. Yeah, I got 50 head.
Where'd you get them?
I got them from Mr. Kincaid.
That's what we figured, son.
Look, I didn't steal them, honestly. I bought and paid cash for them.
You got a bill of sale?
Mr. Kincaid was out on the range. He said he'd mail a bill of sale to me.
Finally.
Yeah?
How long have you known Larry Kincaid?
Ever since we were kids.
Ever know him to sell any cattle without a bill of sale?
Never.
But he did, I tell you. He'll tell you himself. Why don't you go ask him?
Quit bluffing. You know that Larry Kincaid can't tell us anything.
Why not?
He's dead.
Well, that wasn't enough for Chetley. He had to have his fun with the other two, the old man and the Mexican. But the old man just kept blubbering.
I didn't do nothing. I don't want to die. I don't want to die in the dark.
And the Mexican kept insisting stubbornly.
No sabe, senor. Me no sabe.
And still young Martin, stuck by his guns, refused to change his story one bit.
I tell you, Kincaid was alive yesterday afternoon. He sold me those cattle to stock my place. Don't you believe me? Why do you have to blame it on me? Who gave you the right? Who sent you up here?
The sheriff.
Now, that's not true, Major Tetley. The sheriff didn't even know we were coming.
No, but I did.
That's right, Mapes. Mr. Davies, perhaps I should have said the deputy sheriff. That makes it quite legal, I believe.
Yeah. Now, listen, men. I'm not trying to obstruct justice, but this lad is only asking what he's entitled to, a fair trial. Now, Martin, you say you're innocent, and I, for one, believe you.
Makes you the only one, Davies.
All right, men, tie them up.
No, you don't mean you're going to... But you can't. I've got kids. One of them's just a baby. Look, just give us some time. That's all I want, a little time.
You've had too much already.
Well, I've got to write a letter. If you're human, you'll give me time for that.
Now, Major Tetley, that's not too much to ask, huh?
I believe you may have a point there, Mr. Davies. Mapes, what time is it?
3:05.
Gentlemen, we don't want to give anyone cause for complaint. With your permission, we wait till daylight. That'll give Reverend Sparks the time to settle his business at leisure.
Gave the letter to me, Major Tetley, and asked me to take it to his wife. If you'd only read it, it's such a fine letter.
I'm not disputing that, Mr. Davies. But if it's an honest letter, it's none of my business to read it. And if it isn't, I have no interest in it.
Won't any of you read it? Any of you? Well, why not? Why not? Is it because you don't want to know the truth? It's a beautiful letter. If you just read it, you'll know he's not the kind of a man who could steal or kill.
That kind of argument don't stand up against branded cattle and no bill of sale.
Well, I was just hoping.
Gentlemen, it's daybreak.
Major Tetley, I'm warning you. If we hang these men and they're innocent, we're due to be hanged ourselves.
Well, then I suggest we act as a unit. There can be no question of mistaken reprisals. Mr. Davies, are you willing to abide by a majority decision? How about the rest of you? Very well. All right, all right. All who agree with Mr. Davies for putting this off and turning it over to the courts, step over here. Mr. Davies, one.
And me, sir?
Sparks. Uh-huh. That's two.
Yeah, me too, I guess.
Mr. Darby?
Count me. I'm with Mr. Davis.
Gerald! Anyone else? Four of you, huh? Now, Mr. Davies, that's hardly a majority.
Come on, what are we waiting for?
Finally, we'll do this in a legal manner. Tie their hands behind them.
All right.
Put them up on their horses. That second limb on the oak there, that'll hold them. Smith, you get up there and tie the ropes.
Sure will.
Finally, you'll whip one horse out. Mapes will whip the second.
All right.
And Gerald, you'll whip the third.
I could see it now. The terrible, quiet cruelty of the man forcing his son, a boy like Gerald, to be an executioner. But it was fate, I thought, that Gerald should fail him this once again. At the very last moment, the boy turned away, sobbing and choking, until Tetley stepped forward and struck him down with his gun and whipped the third horse out himself. Then, as those three figures kicked convulsively in the air, he turned to Farnley very quietly.
Finish them, Farnley.
Right.
Well, that's done with. Now we can go.
Hey. What's going on?
Hey, it's the sheriff.
Yeah.
What's up? What's all the shooting for?
Yeah, there they are, Sheriff. We got them all right.
Got who, mate? What are you talking about?
Kincaid's murderers. We got all three of them.
And hung them, too.
Yeah.
Well, you must be local. Larry Kincaid ain't dead.
Not dead?
Well, but we thought...
I just left Kincaid with the doctor, and I got the fellows that shot him, too.
Well, but Sheriff, them fellows, they had Larry's cattle and no bill of sale.
Give me your badge, mate.
But, sure.
Mr. Davies, I know you well enough to know you didn't have anything to do with this. I'm depending on you to tell me who did.
All but four.
Well, God better have mercy on the rest of them, because they ain't going to get any from me. I'll meet you at Judge Tyler's in the morning.
Gentlemen, under the circumstances, I think we'd better return to our homes. I'm going into my study, Gerald, and I wish to be alone.
I want to talk to you first.
I have no desire to discuss anything with you.
No. You've got an idea what I want to say. You loved it, didn't you? I saw your face. The face of a depraved and murderous beast. You knew in your heart those men were innocent, but you were cold crazy to see them hang, to make me see it, too. Yeah, go ahead. Go into your study. Go and hide behind your door, Major Tetley. That won't do you any good. Because I know the truth about you now. I'm not the coward in this family. You are. You're the coward. You're the one. Go ahead. Put a bullet in yourself. That doesn't change anything. You're the coward. You.
What's the matter? Don't nobody want to buy a drink? I ain't running this saloon for my health, you know.
I don't feel like a drink right now.
Funny thing. Me either.
Would some of you boys like me to tell you why?
Oh, lay off, Davies.
Because I asked you to read a letter and you wouldn't. You wouldn't even listen to it. But you're going to listen. You're going to listen to it now. I'm going to read it to you. It says, "My dear wife, Mr. Davies will tell you what is happening here tonight. He's done everything he can for me. I suppose there are some other good men here, too, only they don't seem to realize what they're doing. They're the ones I feel sorry for. They'll have to go on remembering this all their lives. A man just naturally can't take the law into his own hands and hang people without hurting everybody in the world. Because then he's not just breaking one law, but all laws. Law is a lot more than words you put on a book, or judges, or lawyers, or sheriffs you hire to carry it out. It's sort of like the conscience of the whole world. And when you hit at that, you hit at everybody. Everywhere. Well, there's more, but it's kind of personal. I don't think he'd want me to read it. Besides, I think you've heard enough.
Yeah, I gotta be going anyhow.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, they've gone now. The town looks almost deserted again. A blazing sun. One dusty street and nothing moving. Just an old, tired mongrel dog. It won't be remembered very long. A small thing, not much. You might say, just an incident.
Oh, sweet love, speech chariot, coming for to carry me.
You have just heard the Hollywood soundstage production of 20th Century Fox Studios' great dramatic hit, The Oxbow Incident, starring Charlie Ruggles as Mr. Davies and Edward Arnold as Major Tetley. And now, back on stage for a final word. Here are the stars of our play tonight, Edward Arnold and Charlie Ruggles.
Well, thank you very much. I shouldn't have to tell you how happy we were to do this show tonight. I'm sure you all know that this radio program helps support the Motion Picture Relief Fund. And every actor in Hollywood is proud to share in a great work like that. Right, Eddie?
Absolutely, Charlie. And not only actors, producers, writers, directors, everyone in our industry is combining to make this half hour one of the really great spots of the radio week.
And, folks, you'll realize just how great when Hugh Douglas tells you about next week's show. In about 10 seconds from now.
That gives us just 10 seconds to wrap it up, Charlie. Good night, everybody, and many thanks.
Yeah, good night. Good night. Thanks again.
Next week, Hollywood Soundstage brings you the dramatic treat of the radio season. Two magnificent performers in a magnificent story. Richard Widmark and Eleanor Parker in a radio adaptation of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's unforgettable motion picture, The Postman Always Rings Twice. Next Thursday night at the same time, Eleanor Parker and Richard Widmark in The Postman Always Rings Twice. Don't miss it. The Oxbow Incident was presented tonight through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox Studios, whose current release is Decision Before Dawn, starring Richard Basehart and Gary Merrill. Edward Arnold will soon be seen in the 20th Century Fox picture, Bells on Their Toes. Also heard in tonight's play were Bill Boucher, Frank Nelson, Ken Christie, Virginia Gregg, Norman Field, Herb Vigran, and Will Wright. Hollywood Soundstage was transcribed in the film Capital. Our play was adapted and directed by Harry Cronman. To be sure your giving gets there, when you send food or textiles overseas, use CARE. CARE is the nonprofit worldwide organization for person-to-person relief. In 6 years, CARE has delivered 11 million packages overseas. CARE charges only the cost of wholesale buying and bulk shipping. And CARE guarantees delivery. Write for a catalog to your local office of CARE. CARE. This is Hugh Douglas. And remember, you meet sparkling comedy when you meet Millie Sunday evenings on the CBS Radio Network.
The Hollywood Soundstage, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 17th, 1952, on CBS, an adaptation of the Oxbow Incident. That story was adapted on the silver screen in 1943 and was nominated for the 1944 Academy Award for Best Picture, but lost out to Casablanca. You're listening to an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for John Daner's role as Paladin and Have Gun Will Travel. From October 30th, 1960 on CBS, the story called Oil.
boy is offering $10,000 for your property. Whether you sell it or not, I'm here to see that he doesn't get robbed.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Over here, hey boy.
Oh, there you are, sir. My, you look very comfortable.
Yes, I was very comfortable, but I really didn't think it would last too long. What do you want, hey boy?
A gentleman wants to see you.
Mm-hmm. About a job?
Maybe so.
Hey boy, I'm not looking for a job today. I'm tired. See if you can get rid of him.
Oh, too late.
Why?
Ma'am, follow me over here, see?
Oh, no.
Ah, there you are, Mr. Paladin.
Yes?
You don't remember me, do you, sir?
No, I'm afraid not.
That's been quite a few years, but I remember you. My name's F. Milton Gardner.
F. Milton Gardner?
Yes, sir.
Roger Gardner's son?
That's right.
Well, you've grown 2 feet since I saw you last. Sit down, sit down.
Oh, thank you.
You don't need me anymore, Mr. Paladin?
No, thank you. That'll be all, hey boy.
Yes, sir.
Well, F., what brings you into San Francisco?
I'm looking for advice, Mr. Paladin. And my father always said you were the man to come to if I ever needed help.
Yes, I was sorry to learn your father had died, F. What have you been doing since?
I finished school. I promised him I'd do that, but... Well, I'm afraid I haven't accomplished too much since then.
Well, sometimes it takes a while to find the right niche.
You see, father left me quite a sum of money, and I've tried to follow in his footsteps, but I haven't been too successful. I've invested in a number of schemes, expecting to make a profit.
But it's not easy, is it?
No, sir. Mr. Paladin, I need your advice in what could be a final investment.
What is it, Ed?
Well, I've got a newspaper clipping here. Read this, sir.
For sale cheap. Oil-producing property. Must sell. Chance to make a fortune.
Yeah.
Contact Claude Spicer. Reward, California. Where's that?
It's in the Joaquin Valley. There have been a lot of oil discoveries there.
Well, now, F., I don't know much about the oil business.
But maybe you could see that I don't get swindled again. If you could go with me to Reward and things work out as I hope they will, I'll give you a share. A royalty, I believe they call it. Could be worth a fortune.
Sounds tempting.
Then you'll do it?
Only on certain conditions.
Anything you say.
That you'll take my advice, even if I tell you not to buy the land.
Oh, I'll leave the negotiations entirely up to you.
And you must not hand out any royalties, even to me. If this turns out as well as you expect it to, I'll send you a bill. Fair enough?
Fair enough, Mr. Paladin.
From San Francisco, F. Milton Gardner and I journeyed south aboard the schooner Allie May. Along the coast, we stopped at Santa Cruz, Monterey, and finally San Luis Obispo. There, we met a little man by the name of Cobb Watson. He was taking a wagon load of pipe into Reward and said that we could ride along. We traveled in silence most of the way and eventually passed through a steaming valley that showed a slimy surface which looked like black mud to me, but Cobb assured us it was surface evidence of oil. Later, we pulled up on the main street of Reward.
Well, this is it. End of the line.
Thanks very much, Mr. Watson.
Anytime, Sonny.
Yes. Thank you, Cobb.
I suppose you'll be looking for some oil property to lease. Don't nobody come to Reward for nothing else.
The fact is, we've come to see about some land that's for sale.
For sale, huh?
Yeah.
Well, who are you dealing with?
His name is Spicer.
Claude Spicer?
Yeah. You know him?
Sure, I know him. Everybody does. There he sits over there.
Oh, where?
See them two fellas sitting over there in front of the general store?
Yeah.
Well, the big fat one whittling on a stick, that's Claude Spicer. The fellow with him is Doc Belden. They're kind of a corporation.
How's that?
Well, Doc Belden is an old retired horse doctor. Claude's on his last legs, and Doc keeps him alive a day at a time.
What's the matter with him?
Well... Too much fat, if you ask me. But that don't keep him from being clever as a fox. You just watch your step with Claude Spicer.
Well, thanks for the advice.
Well, I got to get these pipes delivered. Good luck to you.
You've been very helpful, Cobb.
Oh, say, if you should find some good oil land, look me up. I'm an expert at hand drilling. Now, come on there. Hurry up. Come on. That's so long.
Watch our step, huh?
Yeah. Well, let's go find out why. Come on. Hello.
Hello?
We're here to talk to Mr. Spicer.
I'm Doc Belden. This is Claude Spicer.
So we were told.
Somebody say my name, Doc.
Easy, Claude. There's a couple of strangers around here to your left.
Well, you men come around front so I can see you. That's better.
We're from San Francisco, Mr. Spicer.
Whoa. Seen the ad, did you?
Yes, sir. I'm F. Milton Gardner, and this is Mr. Paladin. We've come to buy your land.
Good, good.
Mr. Spicer, is there somewhere we could go and talk over this business?
Oh, right here is good. It's good enough. Doc, it's Murphy in town today.
Yeah, I seen him hanging around the blacksmith.
Good. Don't let him get away. Truth is, Mr. What's your name?
Paladin.
That's it. Truth is, I think you're too late. Got another party looking at it.
Hey, I'll take it easy, Claude.
There's another party, so if you want it that quick, you get down to the livery stable and ask for Spicer's horses.
Where's the property?
Oh, stable boy will tell you.
Yeah. Well, all right, if that's the way you do business. Come on, F.
No. You go, Mr. Paladin. I don't want to influence your decision in any way. I'll go check into the hotel.
All right.
I'll talk to you when you get back.
I hope you brought your money, Paladin.
That's the boy who is buying. I'm here to see that he gets a fair deal.
Oh, good, good.
Well, I'll let you know how good it is after I see the property. Goodbye.
Yeah, bye.
Well, Claude, what do you think?
Get Murphy, Doc. Get Murphy.
Oh, you ain't gonna need him for these two.
Get him, I said. Tell him to get right out to the well and do the usual. I'm going over to the hotel and talk to that boy.
Why?
Oh, he's the one that's doing the buying. Didn't you hear him? Silly dudes. Suckers.
At the livery stable, I thought I detected an expression of amusement from the stable hand as he saddled Mr. Spicer's horse. Following his instructions, I found the property in a desolate, abandoned area, completely away from the choice drilling sites pointed out by Cobb Watson when he rode into Reward. And over a forbidding-looking hole in the ground perched a dilapidated drilling platform with a sign proudly proclaiming this as Spicer's number one. I dismounted and proceeded to take a closer look. Yeah. Oh, no, you don't. Had enough? Answer me or I'll shoot again.
You should stay away from that well, you are. I'm buying the land for myself.
Maybe not. Come down here and talk this over. Or had you rather shoot it out?
That. Be a sport. You're supposed to run.
Throw down your rifle and walk towards me.
It's not playing fair, you are.
You do it.
All right. Here it is.
Now walk.
There, I had to say, it is an unfair advantage you've taken.
Unfair? You started shooting at me.
You're supposed to run tail when I shoot. All the others did.
The others?
I ain't supposed to tell, but you got me dead to rights. I might as well tell you the whole story. Murphy's me name. What's yours?
Paladin.
Glad to meet the likes of you, Paladin. You sure know how to handle a gun.
Start talking, Murphy.
Well, Spicer pays me to come out here and shoot at them what's come to buy the property. I'm to keep them from getting a good look at this dry hole. When I hollers that I want the land for myself, it makes them greedy.
I see. Then they rush back to Spicer to buy the land, is that it?
That way he gets their first money, the down payment. You know, lad, you're the first one to shoot back. I like you for that. Here, let me show you something. Come here.
What is it?
Look in the hole. See the aisle?
Yeah, I saw that before you started shooting at me.
That is the teaser. Now look closer. You see that pipe?
Yeah.
There's a plug in the end of it. Kind of hard to see for the oil. When we pull that plug, there's lots more oil.
Well, this is a dry hole. How does he manage that?
By storing 1,000 barrels of oil on yonder hill. He just pipes it over to this spot.
Ah, I see.
Hey, did you pull that plug in the pipe?
No.
And it's busted. Look at the oil oozing out of there.
Yeah.
See, you don't suppose there's any chance? Nah, it couldn't be, not out here. Old Spicer must be getting desperate. Yeah, it is another of his tricks, you can be sure of that.
Maybe. Murphy, I think I'd better get back to town. I remembered Cobb Watson said he knew how to use a hand drill. I needed him now. Finding him was a fairly simple matter. He agreed to go out with me to inspect Spicer's number one. And when he saw what was coming out of the ground, he became very excited and nervously paced the area, scanning the horizon for signs known only to himself. Occasionally, he would stoop and sift handfuls of dirt through his fingers. Finally, he took off his hat and filled it to the brim with the black substance that oozed from the hole.
It could be good. This is liquid asphaltum. The ground shows sulfur remnants. We might even hit lubrication crude if we drill deep enough.
Cobb, if you owned this land, would you drill on it?
I would, and if I didn't own it, I'd try to buy it.
Well, if I get this land, will you boss the drilling job?
Well, I ain't much on bossing, but I can drill that hole deeper than any man in these parts. I'll do it for you.
Good.
Think you can get title to the land?
That'll be the easiest thing we'll have to do.
Let me get this straight, Paladin. You want this boy to buy the land?
That's right.
Here's a draft on my bank in San Francisco for $10,000, Mr. Spicer.
Well, that's a lot of money, boy.
What are you stalling for, Claude? Take it.
No, hold on, Doc. Paladin, the boy tells me you're a gunfighter.
Only when I have to be.
What about old Murphy? You run into him out there?
Yes, it did.
Murphy, he must have thought a tornado hit him. You didn't kill him.
No, he's all right.
Good.
What about him, Mr. Spicer? You selling?
Of course he's selling.
No, hold on. I ain't so sure I'm going to sell this boy. I like him.
Claude.
But he's offering $10,000, Mr. Spicer.
I know. But I wouldn't want to see him robbed. Is there any chance you're thinking of swindling this boy, Paladin?
He's my friend, Mr. Spicer.
You can't ever be sure, boy.
Look, Spicer, you said the property was for sale. We've come all the way from San Francisco to buy it.
All right. I'll take the check. But tell me something. What makes you think it's such a good buy, huh?
Like you said, the well is already producing.
Producing? Oh, well, sure. That's right, it is. Why, you know, I'll bet you could get 1,000 barrels out there your first day.
Thank you.
6 weeks, F and I helped Cobb Watson construct a drilling rig. And every morning, Claude Spicer and Doc Belden would drive out on the buckboard to watch us work, and they'd stay all day, with Spicer sitting on a pile of blankets in the wagon bed. Occasionally, he'd break into uncontrolled laughter, and Doc would drive him off a ways to settle him down. Afterwards, they'd come back and take up their vigil once again. Finally, the day came. I was leading the horse, pulling the crosspiece on the drill, while Cobb and F handled the drill pipe at the hole. Come on, come on, boy, come on. Come on, keep moving.
Paladin, wait!
Who now? What's the matter?
Come here.
What's going on?
Listen.
What does it mean, Mr. Watson?
It means we've hit it, boy. Paladin, get that horse on hitch and hurry. I gotta get these tools loose if it ain't too late.
All right. Easy, boy. Easy now. It's all right. It's all right. Come on.
Hurry up, Paladin. We'll have to leave the tools. She's gonna blow up. Hurry, come on, round.
Come on, boy, come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on.
Hey, wait now. This will be fair enough.
I will.
Now watch. Look at that, Paladin. Prettiest one I ever seen.
Congratulations, boy. You finally did it. Brought in my well.
Your well? Aren't you a little mistaken?
Now, Claude, don't get yourself all worked up.
Oh, come on now. Don't spoil my fun, Doc. I've been waiting a long time for this. I want to thank you, Paladin. I want to thank... Doc, help me. Give me a hand.
Paladin, quick, grab him.
Yeah, I've got him. Get some water, F.
Yes, sir. No, never mind, boy. Water won't help now.
Well, my well. Suckers! Ever let one of me...
Gee, that's a shame, Mr. Paladin.
I knew this was going to happen. Tried to tell him. He just wouldn't listen to me.
Doc, what did Mr. Spicer mean when he said it was his oil?
Oh, this was Claude's last joke.
Joke?
Sure. Son, you know that bank draft you give him?
Yeah.
Well, it's down in my safe. He gave it to me to keep. He never banked it. He didn't want to cheat you none. And that title he gave you, that was a fake.
A fake?
You mean the boy doesn't own this land?
No, it was his last big joke. Claude was like that, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't want to cheat the boy. He liked him. Old Claude was just having fun.
Mr. Paladin, what are we going to do?
Well, I don't know, F. Looks like old Claude had the last laugh on both of us. All we can do now is go back to San Francisco and find you a new advisor.
Paladin.
Yes, I know, Miss Wong. Mm. I foolishly left my windows open during that gale we had this morning.
Gale?
Wind, Miss Wong.
Lisa, wind, never gale in San Francisco.
You're quite right, Miss Wong. Yes. Forgive me, I'd forgotten.
You forgive.
Come in.
Come in.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, I have a letter for you from a funny place named Reward.
Reward? Well, it's been 6 months since I was there. Let me see. F. Milton Gardner.
F. who?
F. Milton Gardner, Miss Wong. You remember my telling you about him?
Oh, yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Wong, remember now.
Well, what's this?
Look like check money, Mr. Paladin.
It is. A check for $5,000.
Oh, my. What does the letter say?
Let's see. And when Doc Belden found Mr. Spicer's last will and testament, he sent for me. Now, what do you think? Mr. Spicer had left all that property to me, lock, stock, and barrels.
Oh, very nice.
Why he do that, Mr. Paladin?
Well, he goes on to say Mr. Spicer did it because F provided him with the biggest laugh of his life. That's too bad.
Oh, why too bad if a man laughs?
Well, Miss Wong, I've seen a lot of men die. But that was the first time I'd ever seen a man die laughing. And it was that last laugh that killed him.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy and Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun, Will Travel by Tom Hanley and Jack Moyles. Featured in the cast were Bill Idelson, Ralph Moody, Frank Cady, Jack Moyles, and Marvin Miller. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 30th, 1960 on CBS, about six broadcasts away from the show's conclusion. And that wraps up this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.